Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode of the Runner's World podcast is powered by New Balance Fuel Cell. If you're aiming for a faster half marathon, 10K, 5K or less, then good news, the New Balance Fuel Cell shoes could be for you. Crafted for speed, the new and improved fuel cell technology has a high rebound sole and increased responsiveness so that you can run that personal best whatever your level. For speed built faster, check out the New Balance Fuel Cell now at newbalance.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Runner's World podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, reviews and interviews. I'm Ben Hobson, the Runner's World digital editor, and I'm here with Editor-in-Chief Andy Dixon. Andy, what have we got coming up on this week's episode?
This week we're speaking with sports psychologist Dr. Josie Perry about the effect of fitness technology and social media on running. She'll be looking at the positives and negatives of platforms like the Twitter, Facebook and Strava, and also offer some suggestions about how runners can better manage their relationship with social media.
Fantastic. I think we could all take a bit of advice from a professional when it comes to spending too long on our phones.
Absolutely. It's like a free... Hopefully a free therapy session with a sports psychologist.
So. Oh, God, I'll start crying.
yeah, we could all do with a bit of guidance. Is our usage normal? Are we going overboard with social media? Because I think everyone's probably on it,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, for sure.
So hopefully she'll have some interesting stuff to tell us.
Fantastic. And what else have you been up to recently?
Just running, general low-level running, Ben.
Good.
I kind of feel like I went for a five-mile run yesterday, which is just kind of a par kind of weekend run.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I'm a bit goalless at the moment.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just kind
of.
Obviously I'm enjoying my running.
Oh, good.
But I feel like I need some kind of race or challenge or something in the diary to keep me honest.
Right, I see. Yeah.
At the moment, there's nothing. You know, spreading through until Christmas. I need a goal, I think.
What about maybe some cross country?
Yeah. Cross country, get a bit muddy. Maybe a fast target, a fast 5K. That was one of my resolutions at the start of the year, to run a sub 19 5K. I haven't even tried to do that. I took the other one off, which was to run my first ultra marathon. I did that in January, so. I've got just under 4 months to attend to the other one.
What was your time in the last fast K that you did?
I can't remember.
No, I haven't done one.
I just don't run 5Ks that often.
Okay.
So I couldn't tell you. I mean, I think my PB is above 19 minutes, probably 19 and a half, which I feel like could be lowered. But that involves lots of painful
speed
short, fast running sessions, and that's kind of scary.
Well. You've said it on air, which, you know, live on the podcast, which is perfect segue.
I'm committed.
Into the use of social media and running. And one of the things we will discuss with Dr. Josie Perry is posting your ambitions online. So, without further ado, guest of the week.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is sports psychologist Dr. Josie Perry. Josie recently published the book Performing Under Pressure off the back of a recent study on the effects of social media on running, and we're delighted to have her on the podcast to talk about her findings. Josie, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I think the general consensus would be that running is often considered a lonely pursuit. Is this one of the positives of social media that gives runners a sort of ready-made community that they can join?
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of different research with different running groups, usually ultra runners or runners with kind of really high levels of mental toughness. And those runners really feel like they need to train on their own so that they can do the exact training that they've set for themselves or has been set for them. So they can't often join in other sessions. That means they get really lonely, particularly for the longer you're going, the longer you're out there on your own. So they really value having social media as a community to catch up with afterwards and to feel part of something bigger.
And do you think that so it's about community. Do you think it can also broaden their horizons and kind of open them up to new ideas and see what other people are doing?
Yeah, there's a really lovely element of confidence called vicarious confidence. And we get that from seeing other people who are quite like us, seeing what they're doing and realising, well, if they can do it, maybe I can too. So someone like Paula Radcliffe, absolutely amazing, but I'm never, ever going to get anywhere near her level. So seeing what she does doesn't really inspire me. Whereas seeing someone that used to be the same speed as me at parkrun, who's getting a little bit faster all the time, actually that really makes me want to get a bit faster too, see what kind of things they're up to, seeing what they're doing and how we might do that.
Yeah, I think that the things like Strava and those sorts of platforms, which I guess are the main social media platforms associated with athletic endeavour rather than the traditional ones, those platforms really allow people to sort of view everyone else's efforts.
Yes, and they can be really positive for that, but they can also be really negative. So if you're someone that is ultra competitive, you don't just see each run as going out for a run. It suddenly becomes every single run is some kind of competitive element, and people are worried about what they'll look like when it uploads afterwards, and it becomes a source of pressure and worry rather than something that's kind of joyful.
I see. And there's also, I guess, the pressure to be posting as well. So the sort of the rest day doesn't exist because there's that, you know, you need to be shown to be out there, you know, you need that running selfie or you need that effort recorded. So I guess like that side of it too.
Yeah, I interviewed somebody who said one day they went out for their run and a few miles in they realised their Garmin hadn't charged properly and they wouldn't be able to upload it. And actually they felt really pleased at that point because they could relax and do the run they were supposed to do,
right,
which is probably a recovery run, rather than worrying about what it was going to look like when they uploaded it later and who was going to be judging them and whether they've been running fast enough.
Because I think, I suppose it stands to reason that, because on Instagram, for instance, it presents a very kind of idealised view of people's lives. You know, people edit and kind of put filters on. I suppose that translates into running as well, in the sense that if something's not quite perfect, you're less likely to want to publicize it, and might have an urge to make every run perfect and push harder than you otherwise would have done. Is that true?
All the time. And then people get into kind of weird challenges that aren't real goals or real races, but they're desperately trying to live up to what other people are doing. So one of the girls I interviewed in some research said she'd been training for a marathon. She was doing really well with her training. But there was this kind of mythical thing online that everyone was trying to get to 100-mile weeks. And if you got to 100-mile weeks, that meant you were kind of an elite real runner. So that's what she was pushing herself to do. And then she got injured, of course, and wasn't able to actually do her real marathon at the right speed. But because she'd been trying to follow these other people and join in and be part of this bigger social world, she wasn't doing what was right for her. She was copying other people, and it caused her injury.
Platforms like Twitter and Facebook, are they a good way of holding oneself to account? I mean, you know, once you've announced something on social media, it's out there for everyone to see it, and you know, you can feel compelled to follow through, and that's positive. But then at the same time, the negative is that you're bound to it.
Yes. So yes, accountability can be really helpful, because if you know you've said I'm running every single day for a month and you don't then post about it, you wonder whether people would be questioning. But sometimes running every single day for a month isn't going to be good for you if you've got a niggle or you're overstressed with work and it's just adding extra pressure onto things. So it has good sides, but it has downsides too.
Andy, you recently took part in a run streak.
Yes, yeah, I did. And I kind of felt probably towards the end of it, when my body was starting to get quite tired, that there was this compunction to keep going when otherwise I wouldn't have. And I think that was the main downside for me. I mean, I didn't take it into extremes. I just did it for about 5 weeks. And actually, it was illness that broke my run streak. And I remember being in bed on the day that I was ill, feeling like I'd been released from this from this kind of prison of pressure.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt that kind of, I suppose, self-imposed pressure of putting stuff out online and kind of, you know, people respond well in the and then there's this kind of pressure on you to follow up. There's actually an interesting case study of the elite US ultra runner Camille Herron.
Right.
She used to be very big on posting all of her runs on Strava, so you could look at her in 2015, you could see all of her runs up to a race that she eventually won. And then she had this kind of, I suppose you'd call it a Damascene moment. In 2016, she was sharing so much and absorbing so much feedback that she actually had a kind of blood test, and it showed that she had elevated levels of cortisol, the stress hormone.
Yeah.
So she then kind of took a rain check on her social media and actually went back just to using a non-GPS watch and a paper log, which led to her winning the Comrades Marathon in 2017. Mm. And she's found a way to mesh the two things together now. She uses a GPS, but she doesn't publicize her runs, and then she records quite kind of gratifyingly. She still uses a paper running journal and pen. So she says that she feels like it's more about kind of mood and detail, and the act of recording and writing, she finds a lot more fulfilling than just kind of uploading data to Strava or whatever.
There's two really important things in there from a psychological perspective. So that first one is when we set goals, so athletes looking at what they want to achieve, kind of the outcome goal, but also a lot of the processes along the way, we do suggest they share it with people, so there's some accountability. Mm-hmm. But share it with people that are a few people that are close to you. So you're not sharing it with the world, you're not sticking it on social media or Strava, you are just sharing it with maybe your coach, maybe a couple of other people that will really help you and keep you going with that. Yeah. And the second element that I really love she was doing there is having a paper diary. Yeah. And it's the first thing I suggest to every single athlete I work with. I don't mind if you use Training Peaks or Strava or anything else as well, but it's ideal to have a paper diary that you can write down how you're feeling, whether you've got niggles, notice really good sessions and how they worked for you, so that you can keep a really good track. And it's a much better way to boost your confidence, because you can look back over it and work out what worked really well when you had great sessions, what your strengths are. But it's also a good way to kind of rein in some of the comment or the worries about what other people might say, because no one else is going to look at it apart from you.
I think that's really, I think the stripping back to the bare principles of why you're doing it. And I think that one of the ones that we've discussed before is the fact that running essentially is such a multi-faceted thing now, but essentially everyone does it for hopefully a sense of joy. Like, that's kind of the thing that you get that lovely chemical endorphiny rush that you get, and also it's nice to explore, it's nice to go out, it makes you feel good. So do you think that social media can it suck the joy out of the running?
Oh, completely. One of the interviews I did on a study on exercise addiction, I chatted to a girl who said she'd been coming back from injury, she hadn't run for ages, and she'd gone out and she'd done her first long run, and it was by the river and it was beautiful, and she'd stopped for a drink by the river and she loved this run. She got back and it automatically uploaded to Strava, and then she noticed that her brother had run further and some friends from her running club had run a bit faster, and she instantly said she felt like a failure. And so the joy she'd felt from that kind of hour and a half out on the trail, loving it, instantly went, because there was some comparison when she saw it on Strava.
They say that comparison is the thief of joy. Yeah. I don't know who said that, but it's there. So that kind of backs that up. That same study was quite interesting to read. You found that highly motivated endurance athletes were at more risk of exercise addiction the more they used fitness tech like social media and also trackers like GPS watches.
I ran the study because I work with so many endurance athletes, and I was intrigued by whether there was an increased risk of exercise addiction. And yeah, it came out the more you're using, the more that risk is there. And I think that's because they can be, we call it like really sticky. Yeah. So even when you know you shouldn't be going out for a run, or you know you should be having more of a rest day, or you know you should be running slower, you worry about what other people will be thinking, and then you end up pushing it, and you end up going out when you shouldn't.
This study was based around not just elite level though, right? This was sort of across the board, or was it just elite? Because I feel like a lot of the things you're saying would be 100% applicable to your average amateur runner.
Yes, and I mean, it's tricky when you're an elite runner because you almost are supposed to have many of the signs of addiction to it because it's your day-to-day job. But no, this was run with people of every level. It looked at anyone running over marathon distance, so marathons and over, anyone doing half Ironman and over, so triathlon, and kind of long-distance cyclists. So, and they're all pretty much very high risk of exercise addiction, higher than has been found before. But most studies that look at exercise addiction are probably looking at students, or they're looking at people doing shorter distances. And when you get up to the training that's required to be doing marathons, half Ironman, Ironman level, it does require a lot of time going into it. So you can see why people are using the social media. They're getting involved in podcasts. They're joining in with things. They're having to do a lot of very boring training on their own. So it could be very tempting to use a lot of social media around that. But it also, you get people that are very competitive and are comparing how they're doing against lots of other people and using social media to do it.
Sure. And I suspect that we've probably got quite a few listeners who are in kind of higher level recreational athletes who are training a lot, using a lot of training time. What would be the warning signs of exercise addiction that people should be looking out for?
So the biggest warning sign is when it starts causing kind of trouble in the rest of your life. So when it causes conflict. So you can be doing lots of other elements of exercise addiction and it's fine. If you're a 21-year-old guy, you live on your own, you've got an easy job you don't really have to think about, you don't have a family, actually going out and doing a shed load of running is absolutely fine as long as your body can cope with it. But if you're a 40-year-old guy with a family and a really tough job and a long commute and you can't really afford to be entering lots and lots of races and that's what you're doing anyway, it's going to start causing real trouble in your marriage, not being able to see your kids enough, messing up at work, and that's when it becomes a real problem.
I think that's kind of it, really. It's a balance, isn't it? That's the sort of, if it tips towards the negative then rather than remaining positive, I think that's what people can use as a real benchmark of whether or not they're doing too much.
Though I was really interested, I did a race a couple of weeks ago and the hashtag for the race was addicted.
Right.
And they saw it as a really, and they put it on the medals, they put it on the race numbers. And I wrote to the race director because I was actually really concerned that they're trying to make out that running addiction is a positive.
Right.
Well, actually, there are some people that are really, really miserable. There's people that have gone through divorces as a result. So it's not kind of a great thing to aspire to. It's really important that we keep it in balance.
So what would you say that a healthy relationship with social media and fitness tech looks like?
I think it's when it starts feeling like a pressure to post something and almost like you're owned by those people that are following your feeds, that's when you should worry. And lots of people seem to go into detox for a little while then as they go off completely. Other people will make things like Strava private so only they can see it. So the ideal is we use that data that we get or the friendships we make for real positives. But as soon as it becomes a pressure or something we start worrying about, then we need to control it and stop it. We don't owe anybody else our data.
I'm just interested to know what you make of a curious kind of sub-phenomenon of social media and running, and that's the kind of in-run selfie, which I find hard to kind of fathom. I mean, I'm a kind of semi-regular user of social media, but this is, so people are going running and actually stopping. This is people running on by themselves, stopping, setting up their phone on a timer and then running through the frame to try and get a shot of themselves to put on social media. That seems a bit crazy to me. What do you think of stuff like that?
It does. My husband did London Duathlon yesterday, and he said as he was on the second run, a guy did that. And it was just like, this is a mid-race, and you set everything up to do a photo. I mean, if that's what they love doing, and that's maybe why they run, I guess it all comes down to our goal for why we're doing it. If our goal is to make lots of friends with other runners, to explore beautiful places, to show those places off, we're not trying to hit certain PBs or times, then it's not harming anybody. That's absolutely fine. It's maybe if you miss a PB because you stop to take a photo mid-race, or you're not able to, you're beating yourself up because you're not improving at the same rate that you feel you should be, you start looking at why. Well, if you're not doing your sessions in the way you wanted to because you're having to set up a camera to do them, that's probably a good place to start looking.
Yeah. I think it's that weird thing of just like, the running self is probably a manifestation of the modern era of running in combined with social media. And as you say, that's totally great if that's what you want to do and it helps you enjoy running more. But if from the flip of that, if you are just going running to take a selfie, then
I mean, if it makes you go out running,
true.
And you weren't going to go otherwise.
Yeah, true.
It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But all of it comes down to what works for you.
Yeah.
And that's why sports psychology is so tricky in a way, because you can't just say, yep, here's what you should X, Y, and Z to go and do. Yeah. Because everything's based on our personality and our own traits and our upbringings and our preferences. And we're all unique. So you kind of have to find out what works in running for you and go with that. And that's where the comparison element can be so risky, because you start getting carried away of seeing somebody else. But they might have a much better gene makeup than you that suits their type of running, or they might have years and years of training in the bank that you don't yet have. So remembering you're really unique can sometimes help you stop that comparison.
Do you think that in general, just moving away from social media, I guess, but do you think people runners would do well to focus more on enjoyment and feel in their running rather than obsessing on about metrics and data all of the time?
Yeah, so there's a bit of a move in sports psychology towards biofeedback. And that's used to be done very much in the lab, and that was kind of very much numbers. But actually, you can do some of it out in the field, and it helps you learn much more about your own body. And one of the key parts of my book was thinking about how you really focus on yourself, your self-awareness. So something I use with athletes I work with are called bio dots. And you stick a little kind of plastic dot on your hand, and it changes colour depending on kind of your stress levels. So it can be really, really good. It's particularly good in things like golf, where you've got longer time to do it and your heart rate's not going to be so high anyway. But as soon as you start to see your stress levels get high, the dot starts to go black. And your job is to get it back to green. And you do that by really good breathing techniques. So it's a really good way to learn how you feel when you're stressed, because you've got a visible look of, when my dot goes black, this is how I feel. And you can then practice those techniques to get it back to a much calmer perspective.
That'd be great.
It'd be brilliant before people race, if they start getting way too anxious beforehand. So you wouldn't use it in a race experience, but you can use it to learn your body much more. When you learn your body much more, you're much more in control of it when you need to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that we periodically do in the mag and online. Features about how to run, running on feel is quite a useful skill to have, because if you just base your run purely on metrics, you know, temperature, ambient temperature affects that. Whether you've slept well affects it. If you were just looking at your pace or your heart rate, and actually there's a lot to be said about just tuning into how you feel and using that as a guide to how hard you should be pushing in any given run.
Yep. Yeah. And you see people who finished races and they're beating themselves up because they were sticking so strongly to, say, heart rate that they can see. And actually, sometimes that holds them back because they had a lot more to give, but they were so stuck by numbers, they don't just go with it. And sometimes being in the now can be a really good way of enjoying it much more and actually getting the best out of yourself.
When you were conducting the research, did it really alter the way that you viewed and used social media? Did you find yourself going, oh, that's me, rather than sort of like standing back and thinking that you would just be assessing everyone else?
I'm quite a relaxed runner, I think. I don't take it particularly seriously. So I do sometimes do things like run streaks because I know it makes sense for me when I'm going through busy periods. It forces me to take some time to do some exercise, which I might skip otherwise. So I find them very beneficial for my well-being for that. But I don't put it on social media. I will set up a little WhatsApp group of friends and we'll often do it together, but in a way that we can make excuses and no one's going to berate us. So you get some of the benefits of that social side, but without it being getting any of those negative elements. So a lot of it is working out what works for me and then how do I use my social media to get the best out of it for me.
It's obviously a very wide area and we've kind of skated across it. But I think that what you said about everyone's just got to find their own sweet spot with social media and just kind of, it's definitely of use and, for sure it's changed running for the better in general. I think that it's just knowing where that tightrope of falling off, that falling off point is where it becomes obsessional and it changes your behaviour.
Yeah, and there's a technique in the book all about doing kind of a social media audit. Of looking at how can I use technology to work for me? What works for me? What's good? What gives me data I need or feedback from others or tells me about great races? And what makes me feel really awful? And then you can do a real audit and a cull of the stuff that doesn't work for you and focus on what helps your running.
Oh, that's fantastic. Josie, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast and for giving us a probably a brief, because there's so much we could talk about on this, but a great insight into running and social media.
Thank you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Andy, a quick question that you can answer because this is coming up in the magazine. In the next issue of Runner's World, there is a piece called Why We Run, and it's a collection of musings on the many motivations behind why people started and continue to run. There's everything from weight loss to midlife crisis, apparently. So it's really an interesting piece. So, Andy, a bit more on that?
Well, yes, it runs the whole gamut of running motivations, Ben. Like you say, there's midlife crises. I think Rick Pearson, our absent host, says that he started running as a way of rebelling against his dad.
Jeez.
Yeah. Other people have just said that it's about friendship. Obviously, you can't nail it down to one reason, I don't think. People's reasons change.
Yeah.
You know, that people who have had long running careers, if you want to call it that, they might start running for a particular reason and then it kind of evolves into something else.
Completely, yeah.
You know, when I started running, I actually wasn't a runner before I started on Runner's World, which people find surprising.
A job.
So my reason for running was I got a job on a running magazine and I had to start running to pretend to know what I was doing. But, you know, I did start running after I'd started on the title and obviously grew to love it. I've been there 12 years and I think part of the reason I've been at Runner's World for that long is because I just love running, which is handy. I think it would have been a different story if I'd tried my first marathon and absolutely hated it. I would have been gone by now. But and now I think my running's kind of, as I kind of alluded to earlier, I'm just kind of happily kind of knocking along.
I think that's really important. I think that You say you feel a bit goalless, and I think it's important that you have those little benchmarks that you need to get to, but there's a lot to be said for just having a nice run.
For sure, and that's the main... I always think that when you when your running evolves into something that you just enjoy for the sake of it, then everything else just falls into place as part of that. That's the kind of core, you know, because if you enjoy it, you know, I enjoy running into work, you know, even though it's hard work, it's nicer than being on the tube. I just enjoy being in the park at lunchtime and seeing trees and breathing air.
Yeah.
And actually, then the kind of side benefits, which is, you know, I stay healthy and fit, they all kind of just come along as part of that.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't really feel like it's an effort to run. It's part of my well-being. The me time, the mental aspects have become greater as time has gone on.
Yeah.
And also the kind of performance aspect, I would say. I don't know whether other people's kind of running careers are the same, but I had a kind of a bell curve, I suppose, an upturned U. You get into running and suddenly it's about PBs and performing well in races, and then you achieve or get close to those things.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of coming off the downslope. I don't think there's many more PBs for me. But
hey, well, you've already stated fast 5K. There's one more in the bag.
But the good thing is it's finding other reasons to run. I think I've done that. So I'm pretty happy with where I am. How about you, Ben? What are your reasons for running?
Oh, I think that... I'm not sure if this is ultimately true, because I do remember running before, but it definitely took on a different... drive, or certainly had a different impetus, was when I was coerced into doing a triathlon. That was my first foray into actually
coerced. No, you weren't voluntarily.
No, not really.
Right.
Because I can swim and I love riding my bike, so the two of three were there, but I don't think I really had the ambition to do one. And then I was Windsor Triathlon in about 2003, I think it was. Someone said, right, we're doing this. And I went, all right. And I had to then learn how to run, probably,
I think,
in terms of looking at a manual or reading, because this was before the abundance of information on the internet. Yeah. So I think I had a triathlon training book and I read a few plans and, you know, learned how to do a session. And that's very different from when you go for a run because you feel like you need to go outside and just move faster than walking.
Yeah.
This was practiced and whatever. So I think that was probably the first time I got into running was for that triathlon. And then, as you say, it changes quite quickly into something that you would miss if it's not there. And I'm currently in an injury funk, and I miss it dramatically because it's not there. And I think that's really, I think, where a lot of the reasons why running will change for everyone is the fact that there's this sudden switch of it being either arduous or like a sort of means to an end, and then all of a sudden it's like this thing that you really want to do for the sake of it.
Well, we'd like to revisit the subject on a future episode of the podcast, the subject of why we run. So let us know why you run. Email us at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. There's no Kerry or Jane this week, so Ben and I are going to deliver the running news in their absence. It was a record-breaking day at the Great North Run. Mo Farah won the race for an unprecedented sixth year in succession, running a half-marathon PB of 59 minutes and 7 seconds in the process.
Fast.
Amazing.
God.
In the women's race, Kenya's Brigid Kosgei, the reigning London Marathon champion, won in a new world best time of 1 hour, 4 minutes and 28 seconds.
Oh my goodness.
Records tumbling.
God.
British distance stars Callum Hawkins and Charlotte Perdue, both of whom will be competing in the World Championships later this month, finished fourth and fifth, respectively, in the men's and women's races. So quite a decent day.
Yeah, it was.
For British runners. And and another one. It was two world records in 2 weeks for Sunderland athlete Alison Dixon, who, having broken the 50-kilometre best mark in Romania last week, ran 1:18:26 on home turf to smash the Guinness World Record for fastest superhero in a half marathon. She was dressed appropriately enough as Wonder Woman.
There you go.
Well done, Alison.
That 50K record was pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, it's that was impressive. Yeah. And then to come in 1 week later and run a 118 half marathon is stunning. So well done, her.
I've got a small slice of running news, which has been revealed that elite athletes have worse teeth than the rest of us, despite putting more effort into looking after them. This is according to a study of over 350 British athletes by the scientists at the University College London. And they found that even though the athletes were more likely to floss regularly and brush twice a day than the general population, around half have signs of tooth decay compared to around a third of similarly aged adults. The researchers believe that their regular use of sports drinks, energy bars and gels, with their high sugar content and acidity, increase the risk of erosion.
Well, this is kind of worrying, isn't it? I mean, I'm not an elite athlete, so I dare say I'm not having as many sports drinks and gels as they are, but I'm still a habitual user of them. So it's given me pause for thought. You know, after I've run in the morning and had a gel maybe halfway through, should I be brushing my teeth after I get into work? I think one of the solutions was to swill with mouthwash more regularly,
right?
Which seems like quite a kind of low input solution, but yeah, it's kind of an interesting one, a curious one.
Yeah, well, my basic understanding of dental health is that if you brush too much and you floss too much, you're just going to knacker your gums. Yeah. So there's no winning.
There's no win.
So basically, lay off the sugar is kind of the, if you don't need it, maybe, or you're going to have to go. But then saying that, I was going to just suggest have a banana, but that has sugar in it. Yeah. So everyone look after your teeth.
Well, it's all a terrible dilemma for an elite athlete, isn't it? It's like, right, do I want to win gold at the next Olympics or have a big mouthful of manky teeth?
That's true. But if all that winning bonus money, they can get some veneers done.
They could get a completely new set of gnashers.
Right, perfect. We've solved the problem. Thanks, everyone.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guest, Dr. Josie Perry, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. Feel free to leave a lovely comment. Thanks to Acast, our hosting partner, and thanks for listening. We will see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.